Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of Blue Collar Happy Hour. We've had this one in the works for a very long time. We've wanted to get an oil rigger on the podcast for, gosh, I'm going to say we're going on a year now of trying to coordinate the right person. And I think we may have found it. Chris, what's going on, man? Thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me. I know it's been a while trying to get this going. My work rotation and your guys' schedule, so I'm glad we finally got the time to sit down.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, so I mean, I know I'm super interested, and I know that there's got to be a lot of people out there listening that understand that, like, the life of an oil rigger is tough. Like, we all get that. But I don't think that everyone really understands the dynamic of what that means to be on a rig or on rotation or, you know. Let's just dive right into that. I want to start right at square one, and that's like life as an oil rigger. Like living and working in such a remote, demanding environment, like how does that impact your day-to-day? Like how do you maintain mental, physical well-being in such a high-pressure situation?
The hardest part about, I guess the rotation is the hardest part. Like if you're working remotely, you're away in camp, and you're not used to being away from your family, or it's your first rotation out, it's going to be pretty hard to deal with at first. You got spotty Wi-Fi, or you're not allowed. You got to pay for megabytes on your phone to use a certain amount of Wi-Fi, or you can't FaceTime, that type of thing. So it takes you right out of your comfort zone from being in home and coming back on after for supper or coming home on the weekends or something like that, because you're gone for 3, 4, sometimes 5 weeks at a time, depending on what you're doing, right? So trying to get used to that aspect, that's always the hardest part for most people. I've seen green hands come in and they won't leave their little camp because they can't deal with it. They don't know what to do. They don't know how to think the guys are going to be yelling at them all the time, which may or may not happen, but
right.
That tends to be the hardest part.
The toughest part for me would be like the environment, because I don't think I've ever met or heard of one like soft oil rig guy. Like they all have this like badassery about them, right? So I could see that being very intimidating for someone who maybe didn't expect that.
Yeah, that's kind of a thing that you see in oil rig. You're like, oh, these guys are hard, tough guys, but I don't know, you're not really anything like that. All we just kind of do what we do. Like, yeah, you're expected to do a job and you go in and you do the job and it is what it is. Like there's days that are hard. There's days that you're on the drill floor, on the rig floor, tripping pipe for 12 hours straight. You're moving pipes in the rack, or you're up in the derrick tripping pipe. Like that, those days. But whenever you're working the hardest, I find those are the easiest days, because the time goes by fast. You're not thinking about anything. You're not thinking about home. You're just on the drill floor thinking about your buddies and thinking about what you got to do next to make sure everything goes smoothly. But it's the days when there's slow days, you're doing cement jobs and you're scrubbing the rig, or you're painting, or you're just kind of watching paint dry. Essentially, those are the hard days. Whenever you got time to think, that's usually when things start going downhill for a lot of guys.
Oh, I would imagine. How cold does it get where you're at? First off, where are you?
Well, I'm currently dual rotary drilling in Northern Alberta. And I just got home 2 days ago, I guess, and it hit minus 60 with the wind chill for about 3 or 4 days straight there.
Damn. Is that Fahrenheit or Celsius?
Celsius, yeah. I think Fahrenheit and Celsius meet around minus 40. So, yeah.
That's insane.
Nothing really works around that temperature, so you're just kind of maintaining equipment, hoping things don't explode. You're watching hoses. I can take my hoses, my hydraulic hoses, and snap them in half. That's how fragile they get. It's pretty crazy.
Wow. What is it like getting hit with a piece of pipe at negative 60? Like that's gotta hurt like extra.
You try not to get hit with pipe ever. Like that's a big no-no. If you get hit with a pipe, there's a stand down and every guy on the rig yelling at you. So yeah, safety's extremely, extremely number one on rigs. It's always the number one thing we look out for. If there's ever a guy in a line of fire, which is essentially a swing path of a pipe or something coming in, job stopped and he's told exactly where he should not be, and he will not do that again. I can guarantee you that. So yeah, there's a lot of kind of like I don't know how to describe it, but like people think it's like, oh, people getting hurt and shit all the time, but it's not like that at all. Like there is obviously the injuries and hand injuries and things like that, but when it comes to things that are avoidable, like getting hit with pipe or anything coming at you, that type of thing, it's always stopped and explained to the person that isn't quite familiar with how that works and immediately is fixed. So.
Damn. I guess that makes sense. Otherwise, there would be a lot less people that are already of the small pool willing to do that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Exactly, I would imagine. Right?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, they're digging from a small pool. They don't want to make it smaller. Yeah, what is like some of like the challenges or like unexpected situations that you would encounter on a rig?
When it comes to like the tasks, like usually when you show up to the rig, your day to day is kind of laid out for you. Like without what I do now, being a driller on the rig I'm on, it's not as complex as oil rig drilling. So my rig is obviously a little smaller. It's a truck mounted rig. But we're still using 16-inch casing and 7/5/8 drill pipe. So it's still pretty big stuff and it's pretty heavy stuff. So when it comes to our day-to-day, you show up and you're kind of given an outline as to what you're going to be doing that day. And you obviously take things as they come. So if there's a break, then everything shut down and you fix whatever the break is. If there's ever an issue with gas coming out of the well, then you already know your muster points, where you're going to run to. You already know where you're going to be putting your masks on and all that kind of stuff like that. So
yeah, man, that's I couldn't imagine. I mean, again, I just got to commend you because I don't think I could do it. I mean, when you're away from like family, friends, the outside world for an extended period of time. I know off camera we had talked about you had said that you weren't allowed to bring your phone with when you're out there, because maybe it's like some of the techniques or the software or the tools that you're using are proprietary, or, you know, you said something about the phones maybe interfering with some of the tools that you use. Like walk me through how do you stay grounded and connected to anything outside of what's in front of you?
Offshore was the big one with that. So I was offshore for the first time this spring. And it's something I've wanted to do for a very long time. So I finally got to go offshore there for a couple months, and the experience was unbelievable. But there's a lot of rules and a lot of strict things that you have to follow. And if you don't, you're going to be kicked off that drill ship pretty quick. So there's, it's just kind of the same idea. Like I know a lot of people come on and say, oh, 5G doesn't affect anything, blah, 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 which is fine. But if there's an issue with any sort of technology interfering with what's going on in the doghouse, like because they communicate with the BHA and it's the bottom hole assembly. So that's what our drill bit is and all the technologies inside of that that refers back to them up in the doghouse as to where they're drilling, how deep they're drilling, what types of pressures they're encountering, stuff like that. So if there's any sort of thing that might affect that, then why not just eliminate it altogether and not have anything like that, right? So that's kind of one of the big things with that is a lot of on offshore is a lot of technology and a lot of computer things. So you're not really as hands-on as people think offshore. It's a lot of hands off. They're trying to get away from having people in those positions of line of fire and being pinch points and crush points, things like that.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I believe that. I would imagine there's probably a lot of robotics and automation taking over some of these positions.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. Yeah,
a lot less liability.
Yeah, exactly. Right, the robotics and the everything you see when you see that size of like just the sheer size of everything offshore is pretty unbelievable when you first would get to witness it. So you understand why they have these robotics in place, because there's no way you'll be able to handle anything that's coming at you.
Right. So, you know, with that being said, with you having to be detached when you're out there in these positions, like how do you stay sane? Do the guys, like when they're not actively working, are they like playing cards? Is there like a known thing that everyone's doing? Are they gambling? Like what's going on?
you're leaning on the boys pretty heavy. Like, that's kind of like, it's the only environment that I know of. There's obviously other ones, I'm sure, but like you're a family out there, essentially. Like your guys, you're looking out for each other's backs every day. Every time something's happening, you're always thinking of what could happen to me, what could happen to the guy beside me type thing. So when things are slow, you're joking around, you're kind of fucking around a little bit with your buddies, that type of thing. Offshore, you're kind of spoiled. You get a little more breaks than normally what guys get on land, because we get 2 half hours and an hour, and you get to go to the nice warm kitchen and stuff. So it's nice. You get nice and spoiled that way. Whereas on land, you don't really get those options. You get a nice cold doghouse to eat food in. But yeah, so you're leaning on your boys a lot. And that's kind of the big thing with that, is that they turn into your family. You can lean on those guys as long as you can joke around and have a good time while you're working and everyone's having fun. And it's always, that's the atmosphere that you're trying to build.
Yeah, 100%. I would say, you know, along with that, it's got to be easier when you have this like sense of community, this like network of like-minded dudes to just kind of hang out with.
100%.
I would imagine they pick out the weak ones pretty quick.
you get found out pretty quick. Yeah, you get found out pretty quick if you're going to make it or not. And like, we try our best. Like, the only reason why you get picked out, or if you get kind of like kicked out of the group, is if you're doing things that are unsafe and you're not listening to the guys trying to explain to you what you're doing is unsafe and you can't continue doing that. So if you continue doing things like that, then you're not going to last very long.
100%. Yeah, I think that's just with a lot of blue collar jobs in general. You know, when you have this core of hardworking dudes, like you don't want to fuck around and be like, you don't do shit. You know, you're not going to hang out with
us. Exactly. Well, we all want to go. We all want to go home at the end of the rotation, right? That's the number one thing. So,
right,
if there's a guy that's affecting that in any sort of way, then they're going to be thrown away pretty quick.
I would imagine. So like the environmental impact of, I feel like, drilling in general gets such a weird stigma around it.
Oh yeah. Tough. Some people you talk to were the devil.
Oh, exactly. Coming from someone like me with no knowledge of really how it even works. And I only ever see it in news headlines that I don't really care about. Can you run me from an inside perspective? Like, what are your thoughts on, like, you know, I hate to even word it like environmental impact, because I feel like that already makes it sound weird.
Environmental impact with everything. Like, people, you see people in big cities complaining about what we're doing. Like, you guys live in a big city. How much stuff do you think was destroyed to create your nice big city that you live in? But there's environmental impact with everything we do. Like, even now, like with windmills and electrical farms, like, it's all the same stuff. You're destroying fields, you're destroying trees. But the big thing at the end of the day is, after we come in with all of our equipment, all we do is we square off an area enough for all of the equipment. So you got the rig, you got your big tanks, you got your shacks for the boys to go in, and the consultant shacks and all that fun stuff. The well's drilled, and then everything is put back to the way it was. There's trees planted and all that fun stuff. You go up to Fort McMurray, where I'm drilling now in the oil sands, there's signs that you'll see, and it's oil sands reclamation projects. So it'll say like 1980s oil sand reclamation, and it's a forest now because they reclaim everything back to the way it was whenever they're done.
Oh, that's cool. That's actually huge. Yeah, I mean, I would imagine pipelines. If everyone knew that, it would be less of a big deal, I would think, because I didn't realize it was like that.
Yeah, you need to, like, we have to get energy, obviously. Like, we have to do something. Like, you just saw how pretty much the world shuts down when it gets to minus 10, minus 20 right. Fahrenheit or minus 40, right? It just completely dies. Like, things don't work, and we need energy. I understand, like, what we're doing does affect, like, whatever, the environment, things like that, with oil and emissions and all that fun stuff. But for the moment, like, until we can find a way that doesn't completely shut down everything, we need to kind of work with what we got, right? Like, it kind of is what it is. If we stop doing it, if Canada stops or America stops, like, China and Russia and all those countries aren't going to stop. So right. We all live in the same world.
Yeah. Well, you know, walk me through your personal journey when it comes to drilling. Like, what initially drew you to taking on this career?
It's a lot of friends and a lot of like people I've known over the years that kind of drew me to it. I actually it's funny because I started as like doing the residential and electrical and plumbing and all that kind of fun stuff. So I got my electrical block, I got my plumbing block, and I just kept jumping around. So I was like, I don't know what I want to do with my life. I got to figure something out. So I started with all that, and it wasn't the path I wanted to go. So I started with heavy equipment operating. I was excavator and loader and skid steer and all that kind of fun stuff, which I love doing. That stuff's awesome. And then I moved to Toronto. I'm from the East Coast of Canada. so they call it the Maritimes. So I'm from Charlotte. I live in Prince Edward Island, and I started my heavy equipment operating there. I moved to Toronto, where I met my wife, and I got to start directional drilling. And directional drilling's, you drill underneath like rivers, sidewalks, like big roads and stuff, and you pull pipe back. So let's say you get pipelines underground and stuff like that. And that's where I started drilling, and I got kind of the itch for that. And then I started making my way more west, and we moved to BC a few years ago, and that's when I first was able to get on a service rig. So service rig is just servicing wells that are already commissioned and pumping. They're just down. So you show up and you fix them to start pumping again.
If you don't mind sharing, what's like the average like pay range for someone who starts out drilling? Like, what do you start doing, and what do you start making?
There is a rate. Anyone can Google the CODC rates, and they set a certain standard in Canada for rates. I know in the States, they seem kind of all over the place from what I've seen, but I can't speak very much on them. But with Canada, we have a set rate for drilling rigs. The service rigs are a little bit lower in some instances, but they're kind of meeting each other pretty close, like within a dollar or two. So you start out as a lease hand, and a lease hand is essentially like sweeping, cleaning up around the rig. Like, they're not really touching the drill floor too much. Offshore, it's called a roustabout, and a roustabout is someone that's helping the crane operators, and you're kind of like hooking up pipe and stuff for the drill floor. And then the next step up from that is a roughneck. A roughneck is on the drill floor. They're the ones making the connections. A lot of people see the videos of them throwing big heavy tongs on the pipe and breaking pipe and stuff like that. Yeah. So those are the roughnecks, the guys on the floor. And then there's derrick hand. Derrick hand is the one that controls the fluid. So all the fluid you need for drilling, the mud, like mud weights and all that stuff, they have all that. And they're usually the ones up in the derrick. You'll see the videos of the guys up in the top of the rig that are throwing pipes into the elevators and stuff. That's a derrick hand job as well. And some rigs, like on land, a motor hand is between the roughneck and the derrick hand. They take care of all the motors. So they check all the fluids and make sure all maintenance is taken care of. Offshore, we don't deal with the motor hand too much. He's kind of separate from us. And then you have the driller after that. Offshore, we have assistant driller. So, and that's just another next step below the driller. In the doghouse offshore, there's two seats, one for the driller and one for the assistant driller. So the assistant driller is controlling all connections being made, and then it passes off to the driller where he starts drilling the hole type thing. And then you have your push, and your tool pusher is just the guy that's in charge of all of us. He's usually an old cranky guy that's yelling at everybody, but I've had some pretty good, I haven't had any bad pushes. So that's definitely.
I'm sure that helps. What would you tell someone considering a career in drilling? Like, what kind of specific skills and qualities do you think are essential for success in the field?
You just have to be willing to learn and have an open mind. That's kind of the biggest thing when you get into this, is just guys, like, you don't have to have any like skills or knowledge to do this. You really don't. When you first come in, you can be green as grass, and you can not even know how to open a paint can. Someone's going to show you to do it and give you a paint can. Someone's going to give you a scrub brush and tell you to go scrub something. And if that's you can still get in that way if you really want to do it. But if you come in, as long as you come in with you want an open mind, you want to learn things, you have a start getting a good head on your shoulders for like safety and like knowing the things around you and knowing like what's going on, like what to look for and how to look after yourself and the guys around you, then you're going to come up pretty quick, especially in the industry now, because it's so hard to find guys that are willing to stick around and work. Some guys just get a paycheck now and they end up taking off after that. But if you open-minded and come in, you want to work and you want to learn things, there's going to be someone that's going to show you on the crew. So
can you think of any stories or anything that you've witnessed on an oil rig that you could tell me that really capture the essence of the lifestyle of being an oil rigger?
I guess like offshore, it's kind of the same. Like, the best times on the rig is whenever you're for me personally, is whenever you're working the hardest. Like, service rigging, there's a thing that we do called ESP cable, and that's just it's like a cable we run down with the pipe, and it's gas lifted wells. So this cable is just like a fiber op cable that sends signals to keep the pump working downhole, essentially. So we're pulling, you're pulling pipe for 12 hours straight just to get, and then you're sending pipe down for another 12 hours straight. And damn. You're taking dog collars off and you're putting dog collars on. I'm up in the derrick. It's minus 40 outside and I'm opening elevators and throwing these big heavy 4-inch stands in, like stuff like that. And you're all yelling at each other. Everyone's carrying on and just having a good time. So like that's, it's weird for people to think that that's like a fun time, but that's usually the funnest. It's usually the funnest times on a rig whenever you're really putting out and everyone's there putting out the same. So that's, those are, you're creating that kind of bond with the guys that you're with. That's the best times.
That's crazy. I couldn't imagine the feeling of everyone just working like literally as hard as they can for just like 12
that's
hours straight.
What it comes down to, yeah, you got to put out, you got to put out for 12 hours. You got to do it. But there is, you get your down days too, right? You get days where you won't do anything for 12 hours. And those days are the harder days. Those are the days where you're trying to find something to do and you got someone yelling at you to look busy and you don't know if you've cleaned the same pipe for 6 hours already. You go back right to the same thing and start scrubbing it again.
That'd get really monotonous. You know, that would,
that's some of the hard days.
Especially when you don't have your phone or anything like that that you can, you know.
On the land rigs and service rigs, guys will have their phones. Like, I'm not saying offshore, I haven't seen or not seen guys with phones, but you don't have service with your phone on offshore with second you step out of the accommodation. So you're not really, you can't do anything on your phone outside of the accommodation. But on land, there is areas where we don't have service, obviously, just depending on how remote we are. But I mean, you're listening. Sometimes some guys listen to music. I mean, so if you're scrubbing with another guy, it makes it a lot easier because you can talk shit with him type thing all day long.
Right.
Yeah. There's always something to do. Something needs maintenance or something needs to be fixed. But if you fix it too fast, then it kind of makes the day go a little slower.
Yeah. 100%. What now? Okay. Yeah. Going back to like someone who's interested in taking on being a driller for their career path. What is like the top of the line, like the cream of the crop, the top 1%? Like what kind of money are the top dogs making as an oil driller?
So offshore, I'm not 100% sure what those guys are making. I know assistant drillers are $70-$75 range, I'm pretty sure, an hour. I'm around 55 right now for my range for dual rotary drilling. So if you come out, like if you come out just as a roughneck to the rig, there's a pretty good chance you're going to take home 10 grand a month pretty quick and easy.
Damn.
And roughnecks are 39 something an hour, I think, something like that now. It's up pretty high now. So you get a lot of old guys are pretty mad about that because they're like, I'd start drilling when it's $5 an hour.
Yeah. Yeah, I would imagine those guys was a little bit of a slow climb to where they're at. So they're probably not super happy about that.
The money is there. Like if there's people wanting to try it and wanting to come out, I mean, it doesn't hurt to come out, but you got to take, you can't really have a soft skin if you do it, because there's going to be guys yelling at you. There's going to be guys pushing you. And as long as you can take a little of that, then you'll do just fine. That's kind of, I try to push a lot of my buddies because a lot of people, especially now with the way the economy and taxes and everyone's kind of fucked with money and everything going on around now, like the money is there and the work is there. As long as the work's there, I strike while the iron's hot, I guess. I don't know. It's kind of what my plan is, I guess, for now.
Right. Hell yeah, dude. Well, I mean, Chris, I appreciate you for coming on and kind of giving me a little peek behind the curtain of an oil rigger. Is there anything else that you think encapsulates the life of an oil rigger that we didn't really touch on?
So a good buddy of mine, he actually passed away last year, four-wheeling accident. And he was the first guy that showed me kind of the ropes. It was my first time I was on a rig. I showed up, and I was green on a rig. I had no idea what to do with service rigging. And he took me under his wing like right away, since I was already in the construction industry for a long time before this. I was already kind of used to like guys trying to like cut at me and see what kind of got under my skin. So I could take that shit a little bit. So the second I saw them doing it, I was like, all right, I'm going to start giving it to them back. And I could see them being like, all right, this guy's not too bad. So they kind of took me with them. And, you know, we on the floor all day, just pounding out, tripping, running back in, running back out type thing. We're doing drill outs for a gas well. And at the end of shift, we're like, you know, go for some beers, we go for rip around. We got a, may or may not have a rifle hidden in the backseat. We go shooting somewhere for a little bit, that type of stuff after work. So that's, and I was, I was Northern Alberta, and we were 12 hours away from anything. So, so you do that type of stuff. And yeah, he was a big help in keeping me wanting to do that type of work. And yeah, so he was, that was a big thing. Like, you got guys showing up side by sides and they're like, let's go ripping around after shift. If there's a Boston Pizza 2 hours down the road, let's go to Boston Pizza and I'll get drinks and stuff like that after work. So things like that.
That's nice. So it's not all just doom and gloom and hard work. You got some other things to look forward to.
Yeah, exactly.
You can still have beers with the boys after work.
Yeah, 100% you can, especially if you're in town jobs, and usually the town's not too happy because there's a bunch of oil riggers in the town. Usually the push isn't very happy because he knows the boys aren't going to bed too early that night.
I can see that. I can see that. They're sold out of Jack Daniels and Jim Beam. I don't know why all the oil riggers aren't allowed here anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Start getting up to my age, just stop going out as much. I'm going to be 35 this year, and I'm kind of over the late nights, early mornings.
Oh yeah, dude, it hurts a little bit more, just a tiny little bit more every single year.
Too much, man. I don't know what happened. I think it was 31. I think so when I started feeling it. I can't do the 4 a.m.s anymore.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of people out there listening to this like, you fucking right. I hate this. They're driving at 4 a.m. already. They're like, yeah, this guy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, there's been a few of those. Yep. Roll back up to the hotel with the push sitting in the truck. Let's fucking go, boys.
Yeah, I know a couple of guys that just end up, you know, driving down to work early and sleeping in their car for 20 minutes before they got to get in there anyways.
I may or may not have done that once or twice. Yep.
legally drive to the job site, you know, just lack of sleep.
Yeah. Someone else drives. The sober guy drives, of course. That's the way that goes.
Hell yeah. Well, Chris, thanks for coming on, man. I really appreciate it. Is there anything that you want to plug? Where can people find you on, like, Instagram and TikTok? And are you Instagram on any platforms?
Instagram Inked_WorkingClass is my Instagram. Facebook, I don't use much of Facebook. Chris Eisen's my name on Facebook. Definitely a big shout out to Troll Clothing for recommending me to come on your podcast. It's awesome. I've been working with these guys for 3 years. All their information you need's on my page, or search Troll Clothing on Instagram, or search Google Troll Clothing, and they'll come up everywhere for you. So definitely.
Hell yeah. Shout out to the boys at Troll Co. Always putting out some cool shit for the blue collar dude.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Every time.
Well, Chris, carry on, man.